Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is
Negro Superpower Day. It's December 21st.
Oh, word.
It's superpower. You rejuvenate today.
Is this winter solstice?
Yeah, everything rejuvenates today for Negroes.
Okay, all right, cool. So battery packs on.
Negroes only.
Negroes only. So we're going to do a show for the holidays. It'll be the last show for 2021. We're not going to try to do too long of a show. Just wanted to kind of tap in and say what's up to the peoples. Naya is trying to get it together to pop on. But
she's definitely that mean, the little girl who's like laying in the bed.
Laying on a wet beach. Just
exactly.
Right here.
First of all, I would say peace to everybody. Be safe out there. The COVID is insane.
That Omarion variant is knocking niggas out left
COVID
and right.
COVID crazy. Like, peace the future. You knew it. That was Cody.
Speaking
crazy.
Of, though, I got my booster yesterday.
You peppy, though. It didn't knock you down?
I'm great. I went to sleep last night at a reasonable time and woke up this morning. Like, my arm doesn't even hurt.
God bless you. Which one did you get?
Pfizer. I just kept it.
Pfizer, yeah, Moderna is the one apparently that just really takes you down. I mean, I've heard some people say Pfizer knocks them down too, but I know that Moderna like knocks you down. Like, the Moderna puts you out.
Like, yesterday, I just felt like super tired, but I took my ass to bed, and this morning I woke up and got after it. So
okay, all right, good,
totally
good.
Fine. You're I was super. Nervous about the booster too, so I'm grateful that it was fine.
Good. Yeah, I can't get mine. I think I mentioned on the show I can't get mine till probably in January, because it has to be 3 months after you're positive. And I was positive like Halloween into top of November. So that'll be like in Feb. But these monoclonal antibodies are supposed to be able to hold me down until then. You know, up here they have there's a City MD not far from me, and they have two places where they have the lab trucks. And just like everywhere else, like not as bad as downtown, but the city MD is kind of always busy, but the lab trucks are definitely more crowded than they were just a couple weeks ago. Because I went to Mona and Bruh's holiday party about two weeks ago,
yeah.
And I went and got a PCR test like a couple of days before, and I was the only one there. Just walked right up, boom, and then literally after the holiday party, it seems like that's when the Omicron just really kicked in.
Well, I think you also had my man.
What's going on? How y'all doing?
Hey, you back in the game?
Yeah, man, I'm back home. It's good to be back with my girl.
I'm sure it is. She was missing you too, bro. She was going crazy over there.
Yeah, I was beating up.
Yeah, I was beating up. She was tired. She was grumpy.
Don't laugh at that.
Walking around making nigga pies and, you know, just trying to figure out her life.
Contemplating putting Ivy in that box at the bar apartment.
Exactly. Yeah. Happy to have you back, though, bro.
Yeah, man. All right, y'all. Good to see you, man.
Yeah, man.
Get out of here.
I think I know.
I think what you have is so, like, that Thanksgiving period, mm-hmm. I think this was the first. I mean, obviously, last year people had Thanksgivings, but they were much more tamed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this year, people just kind of like between getting the vaccinations and between just the sheer, you know, just not seeing your relatives. Like I don't know about other folks, and I get that there are people who can live in some level of isolation from their loved ones, mm-hmm. or they don't have family that they really want to fucking be around.
Yeah, yeah, right? There's a lot of that too.
But there are a lot of people who actually love and enjoy their family. Yeah, and
absolutely.
It's a very difficult thing when, particularly when they live far away or you don't really have access to them, that the kind of time that you do have, that little period of holiday time, is just being snatched away again. Is what it was. So I think a lot of people did Thanksgiving regular.
Absolutely.
I think there was not a lot of testing done. I think a lot of people lied about their vaccination status.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of people also were asymptomatic because they had been vaccinated and were not showing outward symptoms of testing, of having COVID. They didn't really test positive because they weren't testing. And I mean, this is kind of what you have now, right? Like you have, I just think that it is incredibly unrealistic to see a world. And I read something today where it was like, I think the guy said, like, it's unrealistic to think you will never get this. It is, however, manageable with the vaccinations to understand that you will not be hospitalized. You will not have severe issues with having,
and you
COVID.
Will not die if you are not vaccinated.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
And those are the things, and that's how we kind of have to see this, because, and I drove into the city today. There's a lab truck on 42nd Street right in front of Port Authority.
Mm.
Might have been easily 55 people on that line. Line was long. You know, you can't give it a block status in Manhattan, particularly on that block, because that block is super long.
Yeah,
but it was a very long line out there. And I think people think that the world is about to shut down again. And I don't really think that's going to happen. I know, again, a lot of people love the idea of, I want to work from home and I want to be home and I don't want to fucking deal with you guys. But I don't know that that's going to be a realistic thing moving forward. I just don't know that that's going to be.
Yeah,
I don't think we're ever shutting down again. I do think some travel might get restricted just because America is fucking wilding with this.
Yeah.
But I think this is it. Like, this is the new reality.
I agree. Yeah. I think it's the new reality. And like you said, I think that this is the Thanksgiving outcome for people not being vaccinated or not, you know, people, like you said, people just wanting to see each other's family. Like, you know, it's fucked up.
And I've been to the mall. And the mall
flooded.
Is motherfucking packed. The mall is packed.
Nigga, the Target parking lot, I had to park at like the Panera, which is not in the same complex.
Yo,
it's that crowded.
It is packed. And I always judge the mall being packed by the valet. Right? Mm. Once the valet starts backing up,
that means
you know it's fucking packed in there. I went in the mall, man, and there are still people, no mask on. Walking around, and I know you motherfuckers ain't high risk because you a smooth 350 and you 63.
Word.
So,
and I know you ain't vaccinated.
Right in the fucking danger zone.
You got the I'm not vaccinated uniform on.
Word. Word. Like a meme.
Under armor down with the Oakleys on.
Yeah.
You ain't got it.
Yeah,
and in your hand.
I've been getting so many calls about, you know, people asking me for the monoclonal information. Like, I'm over the last week and a half, 2 weeks, like at least, no exaggeration, 20 calls, 20 texts,
well,
maybe more.
I know that I did because I think it's safe to say, you know, Justin had tested positive. And just to let you know, like, that's one of the reasons we had that testing at our party.
Yeah.
Like, you can't play around with this shit, man. You cannot be, that's my son, my blood. And guess what? my man, you got to go home. You got to go downstairs and quarantine. And
yeah, I know you got to lock in.
Mm-hmm. I know your shoes is shine, nigga, and that suit is gleaming and you ready to flick it up. But unfortunately, you're going to need to order some Chinese food, okay? And you need to go downstairs.
Yeah, and that's it. Yeah, it's real, man. So everybody stay safe out there, man. Just stay safe and get your vaccination, get your booster, get your whatever, but like stop fucking around. It's not a game. A friend of mine literally just texted me 2 seconds ago while we're on this tape right now, said a friend of hers just tested positive. Like, unbelievable. Literally 2 seconds ago.
It's crazy to me that the Maryland governor has tested positive. DC has been declared a state of emergency regarding COVID, but they still don't have the indoor mask mandate in Maryland.
But niggas are still moving up in the Cheesecake Factory, getting it popped.
Like, you're the governor, bro.
Yeah.
You got it.
And you sick.
I can't. Anyway.
Yeah, so just want to talk about a couple other things. I want a couple recommendations. I watched this interesting documentary on, it's called Mr. Saturday Night. And it's an interesting documentary about Robert Stigwood. Now, Robert Stigwood, he's dead now, but he was a manager. He's from London. He's definitely from England. I think he's from London.
He is
a manager in the 60s and 70s, really, where he made his mark. He kind of co-managed the Beatles. He definitely worked with the Beatles for a while. He managed the Bee Gees. I think he might even have worked with the Rolling Stones at some point in the 60s. You know, so he was, you know, he was a manager of note. Like, he was, you know, he was a business manager.
Now, I don't want to cut you off, but what is very interesting was that the Beatles manager,
Brian Epstein,
yes, didn't want to manage anymore.
Yep. At 30 something.
Yeah, he was just like, I don't really want to do this shit.
Yeah.
And which tells me they must have been some fucking headaches. But what was interesting was that basically he was a junior manager. And this happens a lot. This is why I'm mentioning it.
Mm-hmm.
He was a junior manager. And then he basically bought him out.
Yeah.
Of the deal. He paid him and basically took over the company and took over the acts that were with the company.
Yeah, except the Beatles, because the Beatles is like,
the Beatles said, if you sell the company, we're leaving.
We're not going to be managed by anybody else.
But then he had, like you said, the Stones, he had fucking Eric Clapton, he had a bunch of...
I forgot he had Eric Clapton too, that's right. Yeah, so I mean, he was doing this thing. And then Brian Epstein, just on a side note, sold the company, and he died. He was only 32. He was 32 years old when he died. Like, he was a kid, you know? But anyway, so Robert Stigwood did these things. And then he is the person who produced Saturday Night Fever and Grease. And he did, like, Staying Alive, which was bullshit. But he was the one who basically, he didn't really discover John Travolta, but he gave John Travolta his first movie break. He signed John Travolta to a 3-picture deal for $1 million, which is a ton of money back then.
I was bugged. Like, yeah. he must have had so much.
He saw something. He saw it. And he, John Travolta was on, bro, you froze up. John Travolta was on Welcome Back, Kotter at that point. So a 3-picture deal for a television actor in the 70s was unheard of, really. It was unheard of. So he signed him, and he optioned this story, which was in the New York magazine, about this disco in Brooklyn, Club 2000. It was actually the disco, I think. And it was called, he made that into Saturday Night Fever. And it was just very, I found it very, just a very interesting documentary. I'm not going to drone on it forever, but like, it was, from a business standpoint, it was very interesting because the movie studio, I think it was Paramount, the movie studio didn't believe in the doc. I mean, in the movie. So Robert Stigwood was able to negotiate a 55% to 45% split on the movie. And then, crazy. And then And he had put bumps in it, like, well, if the movie does this much, then you got to add more screens. And if the movie does this much, you got to add more screens, and so on and so on and so on. And then the movie company didn't believe in the movie so much that they didn't even want the soundtrack. So if you look
this
at that...
With all of those, like, Bee Gees hits, and I'm trying to dig back.
If you look at the label on that soundtrack, it says RSO. Robert Stigwood Organization. That was his. So he owned the soundtrack. And the Bee Gees was his group. So he
met. I'm always fascinated by music that ends up being classic and legendary.
Mm-hmm. That people missed.
In the beginning, nobody wanted.
Well, what happened was people, when the movie came out, it was right around the time when the death to disco stuff started. And so the movie company started getting nervous, like, oh shit, you know, your people hate disco and this movie's gonna be a brick and so on and so on and so on. And so they were like, we don't want it. And so he was like, all right, you sure? Bet. So he said that he made $88 million profit on just the soundtrack.
In the 70s. Yeah. That's like a billion dollars today.
That soundtrack was the biggest selling album of all time for several years. And it got clipped by, I think Thriller is the one that clipped it. But like for several years, that was the biggest selling record of all time. And obviously with all
that's
the number ones. Yeah. And then he made like $300-400 million on the movie. And then literally right after that, Grease. He did Grease right after that. And that was another...
played twice a week on network television.
Exactly. So it was just, you know, very interesting. People should watch it. It's very interesting about, you know, his life and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, but it's very interesting, you know, to kind of see how he flipped it. You know, he was a very shrewd guy, you know. Let's talk... okay, bro's back. Let's talk... Let's talk Insecure. Let's just get it out of the way.
So
we got one episode left.
Episode 9, the penultimate episode. Let me think. I'm trying to think of a justification for having 8 filler episodes before we got to the good one, which is where Nathan and
Lawrence
are finally fighting.
You had a confrontation, and we got to see the growth of, which everybody's loving, I think, the growth of Molly and Tori's relationship. Yes.
Just probably, Molly in general.
In general. Right.
She's been wonderful to see.
Yeah. But we could talk about the episode a bit, but just in general, like you said, it's just been a very frustrating season for me. We've been trained, you know, by other shows like Breaking Bad and so on, like, oh, the final season, it's going to be some wild shit that happens and blah, 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 blah. And then this, you know, so people didn't go into the Insecure last season expecting, you know, somebody to get shot or something crazy like that. But we expected to kind of see a little fireworks and a little drama and a little stuff. And then we got, like you said, we got so much filler leading up to the now basically have one episode left to wrap up 5 seasons of content.
I feel like season 4 was just so transformative. There were so many changes. Every character was going through something different than what season 1 would even have alluded to. And then we get to season 5 and it's like episode 1, nothing's changed. Episode 2, nothing's changed. Episode 3, nothing's changed. Like, we see these incremental growths, which is really realistic. Like, you know, you're not going to start a business and, you know, 2 weeks later, all these major changes are happening and you now work for yourself and everything's fantastic. Like, we get that it's realistic, but it's also not fun to watch a realistic struggle. I need a little pizzazz. I need a little sauce on my,
on
my struggle.
A little zhuzh, you know?
Yeah.
And they gave
that
us nothing.
Said, I think this was an excellent episode.
Is this your favorite episode of the season so far?
Easily.
Okay. And why? Yeah. Why is that? Tell me why.
Because it's the Insecure we know and love. There was definitely some seriousness. There was all of the gang back together in the same place at the same time, which we haven't had all season.
True.
And
definitely some comedy.
it was the levity, the jokes hit for me.
Mm-hmm.
The awkwardness was not necessarily Issa the whole time. Molly was very awkward because she was very high, which that's I great. Loved to see. Mm-hmm. And also Torian, I think, is just an awkward nigga by design. I love Torian.
Torian, and no disrespect, bro, but Torian, you know, was a Morehouse man. And if you know anything about Morehouse niggas, like that, he is his cat. That is exactly the prototype Morehouse guy, like the very kind, you know, black man, very stiff, very.
He's also an Omega though, which is.
Oh, is he? He's a Q.
He is.
Oh, I didn't know he was a Q. Okay, I didn't.
There are a few really subtle clues, and like somebody drops it in conversation in the workplace really early when Molly first gets to the black firm.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a Q.
Okay.
Like 99% sure. I mean, my memory is not reliable.
It will make sense for him to definitely be in a frat. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I thought might have been an alpha. He kind of would have been, if I had to pin him, I would have pinned him more as an alpha than a Q, but you know, whatever, you know.
I mean, no disrespect to alpha.
That's how alpha dudes are. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's kind of more how they are. But them just kind of, you know, bonding over, like, well, not bonding, but, you know, them kind of coming out as far as their relationship, it goes to the rest of their friends or whatnot, and her being so comfortable with it. She wasn't uptight or weird. She was like, yeah, this is him. And he was, you know, he was cool. He was just, you know, floating around the joint. He wasn't tripping.
I'm grateful to see Molly's growth, because she definitely went from my least favorite character, because she seemed like a bit of a stuck up mean girl, now watching her be kind of softer. I feel like the therapy is working. She's speaking up for herself more. She's very honest. Like, I mean, of course she was high, but that scene with her, Dro, and Torian was perfect.
Like, guys and girls, I mean, again, now you don't have to be high, but that's the way. If the person you're with is somebody you really like and care for, then that's pretty much the way you should handle it.
Yeah. Like, hey, your past is your past. Me and Trav whole stories all the time. And like Torian said, here somehow.
And like Torian said, everybody has a past. So like, but it's just like the when people mess up is when they don't really say nothing, and then, you know, the person's, you know, kind of smirks or what. It's like, yo, what's up with your boy? Like, and it's kind of like you guys have this secret that I'm being played because I don't know what the secret is, and like you guys have this thing over me, you know. That's it. The fact that Molly was just so like, yeah, this is Dro, we used to mess around, blah blah blah. Yeah. You know, we had, you know, a bunch of sex or whatever, but she was whack, and at the end it didn't work out, and boom, boom. And the Torian was like, cool, like, all right, nigga, like you can go on now, you can leave.
Yeah, like, let's find some macaroni and cheese. But
exactly.
Let's look at that. And then let's look at Molly and Torian and having an ex in the same space. And then juxtapose that with Nathan and Issa, who are, like, she notices, or Nathan notices her catching a glimpse at Lawrence. Mm-hmm. And they're so awkward, they don't even, like, talk about it. Like, there's no maturity there in recognizing that Issa has any type of past. Meanwhile, these are all her friends. You came to this party as a plus one. And you're not going to, like, speak on your awkwardness. Like, I hate Issa and Nathan together just because they're both, I don't know. Issa's awkward and Nathan seems immature.
But even remember at the beginning when they were looking at that house and they were making the jokes.
Yeah.
And Nathan was like, I don't know what kind of niggas you've been living with. And she's how do you not tell this nigga she lived with him for four years. You don't tell him? Like, what the fuck? Like, it's
I think he knew, but like, not even being able to mention it is just,
just, you know,
that relationship is doomed.
But isn't that an indication that they don't really have any intimacy?
Yep.
That you would have such a big part of your recent history, like, not ever come up. Like, there's no conversation, it seems. I mean, I just think their chemistry is whack. I don't like Nathan. I've said that before. Mm-hmm. I stopped watching the show when he was like bugging out on his cousin and shit. Like, get the fuck out of here, man.
Yeah. No, you're right. The lack of intimacy is clear. But you know, and everybody was wrong in this situation. You know, spoilers from having seen it. I thought that the Nathan Issa thing was whack. They didn't talk about it, and then the way Lawrence approached Issa
and cornered her, that was
so whack. Like, and then
nigga, you have my phone number.
And then tried to flex up on Nathan, Because he's like, yo, what's going on here? Like, what's happening? Like, and Lawrence is basically like, you know, this is my girl, nigga. It's always going to be my girl. It was one of them, you know them niggas. Nigga, I don't give a fuck. It's always going to be my wife.
That's, a nigga who does not make his own decisions.
A little realistic, though. A little realistic.
I didn't say it wasn't realistic. It was whack, but it was real. It definitely was real.
You taking advice from Chad, nigga. Let's just say that. Chad is a fucking mess. He's the equivalent. He's a walking barbershop. That's what his personality is. And this is the nigga that A, talked you out of getting back with Issa early on when she cheated on you. Mm-hmm. And B has now told you to fight for her, which you took literally for some reason.
Literally.
Like, Lawrence, what are you doing?
Yeah, yeah. So
I cannot.
It was messy. It was messy.
The last episode?
I think my predictions are I don't think she's going to end up with either of them. I don't think she's going to end up with Lawrence or, what's his name, Nathan. I think she'll end up alone, you know, finding herself or whatever. I still think the Quinshawn guy is going to come back, not to be her boo, but there might be a connection there that, you know, you'll see like her kind of be like, maybe I should explore this kind of thing. But I don't think either Nathan or Lawrence is going to win Issa, air quotes, win Issa.
I agree. I think it's going to end like The Sopranos and you have to kind of come to your own conclusion. I do think that with Torian now being a partner at the law firm and Molly getting into estate law, that they're going to kind of introduce that into the Black firm as a division and bring Kelly in. I think that would be cool. I don't care about Tiffany and Derek.
Don't care at all about her.
Don't care.
Yeah, whatever.
I mean, they link characters together. I think they've served their purpose. God bless.
You think they're definitely going to move? Tiffany's going to definitely.
Yeah, Tiffany ain't trying to work. She's staying with Derek forever, wherever he goes.
This is true. She definitely
going to work. I think we might fast forward into the very distant future with Torian and Molly, and she gets her happily ever after.
I'd love to see that.
Me too, but I don't think we see any absolution for Issa in the personal life space. I do think that we see her
in the business
finally getting her purpose together with business. But I think, we don't get into that story.
Okay. I wanted to mention big week for HBCUs. We had Meg Thee Stallion graduate from Texas Southern University in Houston.
Congratulations, Maggie.
Congratulations, Meg. You know, couldn't have been so easy. It couldn't have been easy with all the stuff she has going on.
And inked a gigantic Netflix deal.
Yes.
I'm so happy for her. And
yes,
fuck everybody that's trying to overshadow that moment with this Tory Lanez bullshit.
Yeah, I agree. Get money, Meg. Peace to J.R. Smith, who's enrolled as a student at North Carolina A&T University. He's on the golf team there. And he recently posted that he had a 4.0 this semester. And he was like, he looked more proud of that than he was when he won the ring. Like, he was just like, he posted himself. He's just like, yo, people say you can't do it and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, you could tell he was like, really just like, wow, like I'm smart. Because remember, people forget, J.R. Smith, he came to the league right out of high school. He never went to college.
I think that's the thing. I think people, I mean, J.R. makes a lot of gaffes, right? Like, so a big part of his public persona was that he was kind of like, I don't want to say an idiot savant, but like he would do shit that you would just kind of consider silly, right? So it was, you know, he was kind of a loafer and he was seen as that kind of guy. Like, and I think he did seem proud of that because it was his thing, right? Like, he doesn't share that with anyone. That's his thing. There's no team.
Yep.
There's no, you know, maybe he had tutors or whatever, but I mean, they're sure, not.
Still, he still has to do the work.
Which is, and I think that that's what it was. And to do it at this age, and he was right, like to be out of school and to have, you know, the last sort of like 15 years of your life being, you know, coddled. I mean, whatever, you know, whatever you say about NBA players, whenever they're taken, right? Like, they're all NBA players, right? Like, they are coddled. Everything is kind of given to them. And to have this situation where he's not really getting that. He's a student. And he seemed to enjoy it. And
a student
and
at a small, you know, fairly small university. Name that
it's, it's a very small school. Mm-hmm. He's absolutely, like, he's very noticeable on campus. It's not like he's at fucking, you know, Kentucky or University of Miami or Alabama or some shit with 50,000 students. And like, yeah, dude, I mean, you know, so I'm happy for him. I'm happy for Meg. Like you said, I mean, just with everything that's going on, the fact that she was able to stay focused, that seemed like some shit that really was like burning in her soul. And I'm happy that they were able to do that. And I'm happy that they were able to, participate in the more traditional ways of doing so, right? Like to legitimately go to a graduation, right?
And yeah, wear cap and gown.
Have that experience. So I'm happy for them.
Yeah, and then the last one was Deion Sanders, who's now coaching at Jackson State University, who was on television, actually lost the game on television this weekend, but regardless, they was on TNT, which he's gotten that school to a national platform. He recruited and got the number one high school football recruit in the country to accept a scholarship at Jackson State, which is incredible. When you got Alabama and, you know, like you said, Tennessee and University of Michigan and all the big schools, Texas, whatever, all coming for this kid, and he decided to go with Coach Prime, and it's a great thing for Black schools to get that. I know last year we were talking about, it was a kid that was a basketball number one recruit, Mikey Williams, I think his name is. He was talking about going to Howard. I don't know whatever happened.
Yeah, he definitely didn't go to Howard.
Hampton. It was Howard. It was actually, might have been Hampton.
I think it was Howard.
Okay.
He was flirting with the idea, and I think, to be quite honest, I think he was using that a little bit as some form of leverage.
Okay.
I don't think he ever intended to go to Howard. Again, NBA basketball is a little different because in football you have to stay 3 years versus basketball. I mean, it's really like one semester of school. It's really all you got to do to pass, right? It's the first semester and that's it. You know, you're out. You're one and done. You know, kids that are like one and dones, they have different opportunities now. They have G League, elite teams, you know, all of these other places that they can kind of go to. So, yeah, I mean, it was great for Prime. It was interesting because I also want to add that this kid is a cornerback. And so I want to be clear, like, it wasn't just turning a recruit, because I think people are under the assumption that this is going to be happening more often than I think is realistic. And while I do think that he's going to get a lot of students from transfer portals, I don't necessarily know that they're going to be taking, you know, top 20 kids at HBCUs and flipping them immediately. Is that something that can happen over the course of the next maybe decade? Sure. But this kid going to play under Deion Sanders is like the equivalent of your kid being like a highly touted musician. And it's like, yeah, he can go to Berkeley. He can go to, you know, all of these fancy schools of music, or he can go to this school and like under the tutelage of fucking Quincy Jones or some, you know, it's like he's learning
from the best. The best ever.
We often, because Deion Sanders is, his personality is so big, and because he's so loud, and I don't mean that in a pejorative.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, yeah, he's just.
But he we forget how good he was.
Yeah.
Like, Deion Sanders is a world-class athlete, my nigga. Like, if he didn't play football, it would have been something else. He would have run track. He would have, like, he played everything. My nigga, he played baseball professionally, not in the minor leagues, bro. He was in the
at
show,
the same okay, time like, as he was playing
at
football.
The same time he was playing football. Like, that is not an easy task. And I know Bo was otherworldly with his talent, But Deion did this shit over a really long period of time, dude. He's a special kind of athlete, and he's never been out of shape.
Which tells me
a lot, and it tells me that he's going to be able to give that kid information and guidance that is not going to be readily available. To him. And I hope that that's the case. And I'm sure he's doing that with all of the other kids, but that kid is probably going to play on Sundays.
Definitely.
Those other kids, I mean, maybe he got a lineman here. Maybe he got a tackle there that might, you know, make it to the league, you know, as a late round draft pick. But this kid is going to be touted to play on Sundays, and he's going to go and get that tutelage. And the last thing I'll mention is there was a report that there was a $30 million swing in the town based on Jackson State football.
Yeah.
Between people coming in, because apparently they were getting something like 40 or 50,000 fans.
Yeah.
You know, showing up to games. That is very good for businesses on the outskirts, restaurants, beds and breakfasts, hotels, just the sheer number of people coming in.
Mom and them fried chicken restaurant.
Mom and them fried chicken is packed now. It's packed. They can't. They running out of chicken. You know what I'm saying?
Earl down to the plant to get some on the
plate. Yeah, they running. They running Earl. They run Earl down
Earl
the street.
Ragged. Earl tired.
Oh, listen,
Walmart.
Sean, I got a question for you because I don't think you were on when we talked about Deion bringing Brittany Renner in to talk to the boys. What did you think?
I think that that's a bit much. I understand what he was attempting to do, which was trying to school those young men on really the life that is going to be in front of them if they go to the league. I think that that might work at University of Miami, where, you know, 10, you know, maybe 12 kids in that room are going to be playing on Sundays, right? The reality is that the majority, and again, I'm not saying this in any derogatory way, those kids are going to be selling insurance. They're going to have regular corporate jobs. They're going to be working for the city. They're going to be working for the government and things of that nature. I don't necessarily know that they're going to be running into Brittany Renners of the world, right? And I mean, it was a bit much for me. It's not a hill I'm willing to die on because I understand the context of what he was trying to do.
And don't forget, forget, Brittany went to Jackson State. She's an alum.
Oh,
that's
okay.
She's an alum. Yeah, that's why he. That's one of the reasons that.
She was
there for homecoming and stuff.
He probably just scooped up. Yeah. Say, yo, come.
I saw this week though that he brought in a kid, Wallow, the kid that does a podcast. What kid? He's a man. He's a grown man. Dude, Wallow. He does a podcast.
Wallow and Gilly. Yeah.
And Gilly. Yeah. He brought Wallow down to talk about, you know, staying on the right track and so on. So what Deion is doing also is tapping into people that he knows these kids pay attention to, as opposed to like, let me bring in, you know, and no disrespect, but let me bring in like some older football player, and that'd be cool too to bring in, you know, Michael Irvin. And then Michael Irvin probably has been there actually because they've been Deion are close. So, and he's on TV and Shannon Sharp, and I'm sure those guys are coming too. But Wallow, who was a guy these guys are listening to or watching the podcast every week, is gonna have a different connection with
he seems like the kind of coach that's in tune to what these kids are doing personally.
Exactly.
And so he's making the connections and he understands that. And again, Deion really
oh shit, bro, he froze up again. Damn. Later. He froze up again.
I think he's gone.
Yeah, he froze up again. But what I was going to say is, what I was going to say just to move on is a couple things. And I agree with you. I don't think it's like next year is going to be like the top 10 recruits are going to HBCUs. I don't think that. But there are a couple factors that have changed this now. One, oh, there you go. You back now, bro. One, which is, the fact that the kids can make money on their likenesses and their brands now. So that's going to help some because, you know, because like I said, Jackson State was on television to play South Carolina State over the weekend on TNT. It was like a Saturday game, like a prime game. So if they can keep that television thing going, obviously that gives exposure to the school. It gives exposure to the kids, which, you know, could possibly help these kids make a little bread as a Nike-sponsored athlete or Adidas-sponsored athlete or whatever. Again, I don't think they're going to turn the top five recruits next season, but I think they'll be like, you know, maybe the 15th might go somewhere. Like the 18th guy might go somewhere. Like, and over time, I think it'll never be fully competitive because the schools won't have as much money. But as long as the black schools have access to some of the same thing as Alabama does, which is television, just the most important thing. Kids want to be on TV, want to see themselves play on TV. I think, you know, you'll get a few more recruits going to black schools because I think going to play for a guy like Deion Sanders or Eddie George, who's up at
Tennessee State,
and people like this.
Hugh Jackson.
Yeah, Hugh Jackson's at Southern, right?
Grambling.
Yeah.
He turned a recruit as well, I believe, recently.
Okay.
And the transfer portal has a lot of guys that have been going to the larger Power Five schools looking to play. You know, yeah. I mean, do I want to sit on the bench for, you know, fucking 3 years at Georgia, or do I want to go play?
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm happy for it's a good week for black schools. Good week. I wanted to mention also before we get into like Christmas stuff. Okay. Not gonna be mad she missed this one. Let's talk about the black church. Y'all think I'm a half a heathen, and Juanita Bynum. So now apparently this video is a bit older than I thought it was, but it doesn't matter because I don't think she's changed her stance. But people are like, this video is old. I was like, yeah, but I don't think I've never seen her say that she doesn't feel this way. So somebody posted a video of Pastor Juanita Bynum, a very popular pastor within the black church. I don't know if she's cogent or not, probably, but I'm not sure.
She is Pentecostal holiness.
Oh, she's Pentecostal holiness. Okay, yeah. Okay. So somebody posted a video of her talking and saying basically that what happened with women coming to church now. Women are wearing like scantily clad with their.
She said fashion Nova dresses.
Fashion Nova dresses with the legs all oiled up.
With shiny legs.
Shiny legs and thongs and looking like they could just, you know, pop their leg up and them and the deacon could just get down right there on the pulpit. And then I saw it was a second clip. I didn't see the second clip before. And she said, why are we doing it? Just because we got titties now? Because I guess you're talking about women getting plastic surgery. Yeah, this is the second clip. Yes, yes, yes. So
okay, we got to remember, this is the same lady who had a full like DVD and sermon series about No More Sheets, which was like her brand for a while, making the correlation that each man you sleep with is some sort of sheet that comes over you.
Oh, is that what that was?
Sheets. Oh, yeah, they made us watch this in Women's Youth Fellowship. One Sunday, we watched the video. It was quite traumatizing.
Explain this again, though.
So she was, I mean, using, you know, her physicality during the sermon was taking these giant white sheets and tying them on herself throughout the sermon. And each one, I guess, represented some lustful thing that she had done with a man. Okay. And that, you know, that whole, like, his spirit enters you and, you know, you have to present yourself a certain way so that men don't lust over you because that's a sin on your behalf, too.
It's your fault. Thing. It's your fault.
It's always a woman's fault.
Little fast tail girls.
Yeah, it's my fault that the deacon is getting hard on when I'm doing a praise dance.
Your legs not crossing and your skirt ain't below your hem ain't below your knee, so you deserved it.
But then, I mean, think about it. This is why we don't go to church anymore. Why the under 40 crowd has basically said, fuck you, to all of your fake rules and the fake news that you try to attach to religion. Like, imagine trying to take God away from the people who the world is taking so much away from in the view of judgment.
Also, Miss
Juanita, would we not? It literally says, come as you are.
Like, also, Miss Juanita, and I'm not trying to pass judgment here, but I just want to be clear, she's admitted to doing drugs, being bisexual, having
fucking
threesomes.
Men and women, wild
yeah,
men.
Yeah, having threesomes. And she seems to be very attracted to women. And again, that's I'm not saying that's a bad thing. Because even this thing she talked about, it was women like her basically, she feels she was almost like lusting. Like, why? It was almost like she was saying, like, why are y'all making me look at y'all? Why are y'all coming in and like, looking
it
like
was,
this?
I don't think it was like. I think that's what she was saying.
That was a lusty undertone in what lusty, she was saying.
I don't even know it was an undertone. It was a lusty tone.
We can't wear lotion now, nigga? Like,
can't grease your legs up in the church now.
I do want to say.
You
got to
preach with stockings on. But go ahead, bro, because I know you come from a very traditional church background. Believe it or not, as do I, even though I don't always reflect that.
Me and Bruh's church background
are pretty much identical.
Yes.
Pretty much identical. I just don't reflect that.
I would never have thought that either. I would say that she's a terrible messenger, right? Mm-hmm. And I will say that while all of those things are accurate and undeniably true about her, I do think that church has become very, because of the extreme lengths that the elders held on wardrobe, mm-hmm. particularly and only for women, that pendulum, as churches begin to go into the sort of mega church mm-hmm. and the sort of, I'm using air quotes, this sort of youthful pastoring, yep. right? Where like the pastors show up in like Adidas suits and shit. Like I felt like the wardrobe had gone a bit to the other extreme. And I think
it's a little too casual for you now.
I think it's a little too casual for me. And I think that again, she was being hyperbolic in the scenario, right? Like that's clearly an extreme scenario, right? So I'm not trying to say that that is the normal thing, but that is a thing. Okay, we've seen clips online of people in church with really, really revealing and clothes that shit 10 years ago would have been frowned upon. Mm. You know what I'm saying? I just think that.
But what do you do about that? Do you mean that? Does that mean they shouldn't come to church?
I'm not saying. Listen, as a church, whomever is coming into your doors to get the word is who gets the word, right? Mm-hmm. I am saying that we're also. It is also okay, and I say this also as a man, because I've seen guys come in where I'm just like, is that really church attire? But I mean, I guess okay. But to me, some of the stuff, because I'm from a traditional background, is a little much for me. Now, do I think you need to have a skirt all the way down to your ankles and all of that sort of stuff? No, but I also don't want to make it seem like she's making up the fact that some of the shit that we've seen in church is a little like, okay.
Here's my thing, though. Like,
as the woman on the panel.
She was not directing this toward the people in the congregation, first of all. She was directing it toward, she said, I don't understand how folks are leading praise and worship in stilettos and tight dresses and shiny knees or whatever. Which, the issue for me with that is, isn't this your church? Why are you not having these conversations about how you want to present people, you know what I mean, in front of your congregation? Then why do we do away with choir robes if you want to project a certain image of the holiness that your church stands for to the congregation? Mm. Like, why are we making it public and accusing people of not wearing panties?
You know what? In front of the church? I don't want to make it seem like I'm not trying to make it seem like I'm in agreement with her. What I do want to say is that I don't think the point, first of all, she's definitely not the only person to have that point. And not everyone that has that point is operating in some sort of vindictive way against those women. There are it traditions in church.
It feels vindictive, though, when you say there's a hoe spirit and you yes. are a self-proclaimed hoe.
Yes, hoe.
That's and, all and I'm listen, saying.
Hoe, and I said this, the hoe spirit comes in many ways, right? The hoe spirit don't have to be, the hoe spirit don't have to be in a short dress. Like, that's a very,
hello,
that's a very antiquated.
The hoe spirit is also in the motherfucking pastor, is all I'm yes, saying.
It's a very antiquated, what she was saying was very antiquated, it was very draconian, it was very old, it was very,
very old.
It was just bad. It was bad. What I took away from what she was saying, and this might not have been her point entirely or in part, but what I took away was some of the wardrobe that is in the church can be a little much. Now, we can say come as you are, but there are some levels of unwritten rules and understanding about what church is and what that means. My mother and my aunts did not wear pants in the sanctuary.
I didn't.
If they went in, now that is wildly old.
Very old.
Right?
School.
That's very old school, right? So I'm not trying to, you know, take us back to 1943 here. But what I'm saying is like, we can do two things. We can say, okay, she's wilding, but the pendulum swung to the other extreme where the culture
is fucking her in the
church. Yeah, that was like, yeah, come on, Juanita. Like,
come on, like the deacon just put the dick out.
Come on, Juanita. Come on, Juanita. Like, but my issue with Juanita was a I couple things. Was like, okay, Juanita, again, we talked about, like I said, she admitted that she, you know, done drugs and lots of sexual things and seems to be, you know, very attracted to women. Still, I'm not judging or saying these are bad things. I'm just saying I would have hoped she would have had a little bit more understanding and compassion when talking instead of being like, duh, 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 point the finger, point the finger. That was my issue.
But you can't be compassionate when you're fighting that inner
demon. Well, I don't right. want to say demon. I don't want to say that word. But I know what you're saying.
When you're fighting within yourself.
When you're fighting those urges
and you're fighting those desires, and everything you have ever done in the world that you live in is telling you that those desires are wrong. Men or women.
Mm-hmm.
Men and women.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So for her, it sounded to me like she was definitely pointing. I think she was definitely hot under the collar. I think somebody held praise and worship, maybe that day.
Yeah.
Okay.
And them calves was looking good.
Them calves and them calves and them yams was looking mighty good.
Them titties are sitting right. Titties are sitting up right.
Titties.
Oh Lord! I'm willing to bet money too that person had on a fully covered tight dress to their knees.
Yeah, probably just had body, yaddy, yaddy.
Like a sheath dress and hips.
And there's nothing you could do about that. But I also think we've seen dresses in church that I think have all given us the okay.
Yeah,
right.
Damn.
Sister Thomas is popping today.
I too have worn a size 8 pencil skirt when I was definitely a size 10 into the sanctuary because I felt like it.
Yeah, okay.
And I know what I'm doing.
And I don't think, and that's what I'm saying. I don't think that that's, I don't, for me, let me just say, for me, that's not what I'm referring to as much as I'm referring to.
I understand.
We have seen the clips where it's like,
yeah, it's damn.
Is her side out?
Yeah, exactly. Does she have any underwear on? And she's just letting it pop and fly.
I do think there's a giant arc of a missed opportunity where our liturgical and, you know, leaders and clergy or whatever, they're missing that opportunity to talk to people who come from where they come from, who do whole shit.
You have to meet
people
where they are.
No one way to dress up. Absolutely.
You have to meet people where they are.
Instead of knocking them down for only knowing one way to present themselves, just teach them another way to do it.
I think it's a societal thing as a whole, because these are two different things, but kind of similar. Like you say 10 years ago, I'd say even 5 years ago, the attire that women wear to the gym 5 years ago and now?
Yeah, we letting it out.
It's like, yo. It's
but
like,
we're also, more comfortable.
It's basically, you're nude, but you got the skin tight clothes on.
But and also,
you know, it's great to look. You know what I'm saying?
Because moving around in them big ass t-shirts and clothes, it gets caught on the elliptical.
It used to be the big ass t-shirt and the big ass
sweatpants. And there has been a rise in athleisure, right? Like there's an entire branding opportunity of making these really cool and funky, comfortable outfits for you to be able to wear. And again, I say this with understanding that a part of my history is making me view it this way, right? So if
I feel you on that. My history as being one of those people who is oppressed by clothes in a Pentecostal holiness church means that I am closer to God now wearing jeans than I ever was wearing off-white stockings and a skirt below my knees and a little bit of my head covered and no titties.
And, like, and I will say this, and I will say this, you're absolutely right. I think that the restrictive nature and not even just the restrictive nature of the culture is one thing, but it is also the sort of the backdoor conversations that elders have mm-hmm. been a really big part of why you see such a drop in youth. And mm-hmm. and when I say youth, I don't mean like children. I mean young adults. Folks that can, when you are able to go to church on your own, that 17 to like 25 age mm-hmm, mm-hmm. is really where they're missing. Because once you're able to make that decision, you don't really want to be around that.
Yeah, but I do black, think that the black church is dying because they're not getting that.
But I do think, there are cultures and there are traditions that are within the black church that don't necessarily need to be completely thrown out and discarded, because we want to do some other new shit. Now, you can change some things and you can add some things and you can revisit some things. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying there should be no change, but I'm saying it is fair to say that some of the shit that we have seen, and I've never necessarily seen this in person, but particularly online, we've okay, that's a lot.
Yeah.
And Jeff, to your point about the gym, white women have always been naked and worn the thong over the
very
tight short and
very
sports bra.
Yeah,
it is now with, you know, older millennials and Gen Z that we're like, no, fuck that. We can wear something comfortable to the gym too, and we could be black in it, and I dare you to say something.
Yeah, no, I personally enjoy it. I just want to say for Inca's clarification, my grandmother was an usher. My grandfather was a deacon. I used to go to everything, visiting church conventions. I was in the youth choir, the children's choir, youth choir, the junior deacons, all that.
I was in the Christmas pageant.
All of that.
You are speaking to a person who definitely watched her first porn and had one of her first kisses, a youth convention at a Pentecostal youth convention where we all were a giant
mass
choir.
Mm-hmm. I went to Pentecostal church one time.
Oh, yeah. That's
brutal. My man Andre was a drummer.
Of course.
And we didn't get out of that church till about 4.
Yeah.
And I said,
church started at 11.
I don't know if I'm going to be coming to any more of these services.
We had to be there at 10:30 for the choir. And we didn't, I remember not getting home sometimes until 5 o'clock.
It was like 11. It was like an 11 to 4 service. Mm-hmm.
And this is why they have to feed you afterwards. This is why there is fried chicken and mac and cheese.
And
not lightheaded driving home.
And the punch with the big chunk of ice in the middle of the punch.
The orange sherbet with the ginger ale. Yeah.
Stop it. The ginger ale punch. Don't know. God.
This is why they had to get your energy back up so you can drive home.
Yeah, they're dying. Dying. You can smell the food, too, in the sanctuary while they're cooking it. And you still in there having service. You're like, well, I'm starving.
Listen.
Oh my God.
We respect you turning into a heathen. You put your time in.
I'm not a heathen.
It's okay to embrace
it. I'm not.
Just for the listeners, that don't know, Jeff thinks that everyone that is shouting is lying. And no. they are not in fact catching the Holy Ghost. That this is a choreographed step.
It is
rehearsed.
It is.
And them babies is lying.
They lying. No. Catching the Holy Spirit is different, but that whole like running man dance that everybody do, I'm like, that's some cat, man. Because how you catching the Holy Spirit and everybody does the exact same move? When I was going to church regular, and the Holy Spirit, people would catch the Holy Spirit. You know, people would fall out, pass out, shout, yell. Yeah. You know, there was no, for lack of a term, there was no rhyme or reason to how your body or you reacted to catching the Holy Spirit. It was some people would stand there very still and cry. Some people obviously would be more histrionics and stuff. And that's cool. But the whole, I'm like, come on, B. I'm like, you're doing the same dance. This is cap.
It's part of our DNA to feel the drum beat and have our bodies move accordingly. That's why we on beat. Don't worry about it. I've definitely been in a pew and felt so grateful for the Lord's presence or whatever I just been through or whatever. And I literally could not contain it. And I had to move my hands. And I absolutely did a step or two. And I don't know what it looked like. No one has it on film. Exactly. I'm sure I was on beat because the African person that lives inside of me, my DNA, put me on that drum beat.
And I believe that. But I'm seeing little babies doing the running man. And
they got shit to be grateful for too. Did you see the TikTok of the white baby who was so overcome with gratitude at the Thanksgiving table that he just was crying and thinking about everything that he had?
I'm with all
it
that.
It happens in the children too, Jeff. Okay. Yes, right. Some people are imitating, but...
Yes, imitate. Let's move on.
Listen.
Because I don't want to get struck by lightning.
In that form is very real. And
I don't want to get struck by lightning.
I'm going to bring you to a good church and give you a shout one of these
all
days.
All right. So we're gonna end it up talking about some Christmas stuff, just our favorite Christmas stuff. I also want to mention this one. I watched this... CBS Sunday Morning had a little piece this week about the Charlie Brown Christmas special. And it was I didn't know about all of this. It's a guy named Vincent Guaraldi. He wrote the music, like, the Christmas time is here. Like he was a jazz guy. And he lived in San Francisco, and he, you know, they recruited him, the guy who produced the show recruited him to do the music. And put him with Charles Schulz, and they kind of, you know, did the music. And the Christmas time is here. It was actually an instrumental, and they were recording it with the San Francisco Preparatory Boys Choir or whatever. And then the guy, the other producer, just wrote the lyrics like real quick. He was like, "Oh, I think we need lyrics." And he just like wrote them like in 10 minutes. Wow. And that song obviously has become like a standard. And Vincent Guaraldi sadly died. He was only 46 years old. He's a big smoker. He died of a heart attack at 46. It was just very interesting. And apparently when they did the Charlie Brown special and they gave it to CBS, they hated it. CBS hated it. They were like, what is this? Like, what's this? It's jazz music. Why is it jazz music? And they were like, what is this? Like religious tones. And like, what is this? It's like, we don't like this. This is garbage. And then obviously it came on and the ratings were astronomical. And it's been on every year since, I think, 65.
Which just goes to show you that the people that are in charge don't know shit about the art.
They don't know shit about the art. They literally was mad at Charles Schulz. They like were pissed off that was a special.
Wow.
And they hated the songs. They hated the songs. And obviously, like, you know, the rest is history. I just found that it's very interesting. And then they took the three guys, they're men, grown men now. They were in the choir and they said they paid them $5. Each, no publishing, no nothing. So they just $5 and that was it. And
wow.
You know, the rest, you know, so the money goes to Vincent Guaraldi's family and the Schulz family and, you know, and then and CBS. Yeah, it was very interesting. So I just wanted to talk about Christmas real quick.
I feel like I'm in the Christmas spirit. Desperately trying. I am.
Because of COVID and all that stuff. And it's just not
COVID.
Good.
It's just so much going on.
What are you guys doing?
So we're going down to mom's. I haven't seen my mom in a little bit.
Okay.
And I guess we just having dinner. We haven't really talked about any plans. Trav surprised me with a trip. So we're leaving on the 26th, just me and him.
Beautiful.
So Ivy gets to spend Christmas with Nana and all her cousins.
And you and Trav get to go a little ham.
Yeah, we're going to New Orleans. I'm very excited.
That's dope. That's super dope.
Yeah.
Super dope.
Because my 40th birthday is coming up, which is mind-blowing. And we're supposed to be in Mexico for my 40th. But, of course, we canceled it because it's wildly irresponsible to do any kind of travel like that with COVID going on. But he still wanted me to feel special, even though my friends can't be there.
Trav be setting the bar. He be setting the bar.
He's so romantical.
Yeah.
But yeah, Christmas is not here in our house.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out if I'm going to go to Penny's or not. I mean, again, with COVID, with the Omni going so rampant and, you know, Penny and some of her friends, you know, they're not old, but they're older, you know, and I don't want to take a chance on anybody getting sick. But, you know, but like Sean was saying earlier, it really sucks because, you know, I just like, you know, y'all, I actually enjoy spending time with my family. It's not a chore, you know, so, you know, but I don't get to see them a lot. So like to miss Christmas would be, you know, so we're going to talk about it today and figure it out. I don't know. I don't want to miss Christmas, but by the same token, I want to be responsible as well. So we're going to try to figure out what we're going to do.
What y'all got going on over there, Sean?
None. I'm about to take this turkey out the freezer. I'm gonna fry that up. And
you'll do the Eve, right? You'll do the 24th.
Yeah, we'll do Christmas Eve. We don't do nothing Christmas Day. Christmas Day is literally watching reruns of Christmas Story, Elf, Home Alone, all that shit like on a cycle.
Yeah,
and then like eating leftover turkey and like
watching cake. Sports and shit.
Yeah, like we don't really be doing shit. I mean, I can go into the basement on Christmas Eve. Justin will be done with his quarantine. He's been coming up negative. Mm-hmm. He's been taking some home tests. So, you know, we wanted to give it about 72 hours of negative tests. So we, you know, hopefully I can get to my man cave at some point. I haven't been in my office. I've been in the gym downstairs once. You know, and I had to go down there mask, but yeah, we gonna take it like my mother in law's here, so
you gotta be careful.
We'll bring her downstairs, put on some Eddie Murphy. That's all she wanna watch. Put Eddie Murphy on the loop. If they make an Eddie Murphy channel, I'm absolutely subscribing to that. I promise you.
Well, I mean, stay on the lookout because Pluto and Tubi got a channel for everybody else. So
yeah, so it's probably coming. He's probably working out the deal right now.
Yeah. So, but that's pretty much it.
Real quick before we jump. So, as you mentioned that, what's your favorite Christmas movies?
What's your favorite movie? Mine is Santa Claus the Movie. It used to come on HBO, starring
Tim Allen joint.
No, not the Santa Claus. Santa Claus the Movie. It came out in the '80s. Stars Dudley Moore and a bunch of unknown people. It's ridiculous, and it's my favorite shit, and I watch it every year.
I like this. I would probably, if I had to go, I'd probably say This Christmas is one of my favorite.
I love This Christmas.
This Christmas was really good because it's entertaining. Mm-hmm. It's an easy watch. It's light. It's not, you know, there's not a struggle. You know, ain't nobody like
drug addicts.
Ain't nobody robbing a liquor store to get, you know, somebody at G.I. Joe with the kung fu grip and no shit like that. So
yeah, that's the joint with Delroy Lindo, right?
Yeah, Delroy Lindo, Idris,
Divine.
Yeah, Chris Brown. Chris Brown. Yeah. Yeah, so it's a really, those are literally like the four movies that will kind of play during the day. And and then in between, we might watch like some 600-pound life shit.
Some shit like that. Yeah.
But I do want to say before we jump, there are two docs that I wanted to mention that you guys should check out. So HBO has Life and Crime, which was a doc that came out in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And this is basically following three drug addicts from Newark.
Mm.
And they did like an update to this. Like, so this guy's basically been following them around from 1984 until 2020.
Damn.
When they did. Yeah. So you literally watch them. So the three characters, I think it was, Rob, Freddie and Delirious. And, you know, I don't want to give a spoiler away, but it's an incredible look at the struggles of drug addiction, like really up close.
Okay.
And family dysfunction.
Oh, man. We keep losing Sean.
We'll
check out that doc for sure.
All right.
I do want to say we are, even though I'm not in the Christmas spirit, we're making it super magical for Ivy because she's starting to catch on.
Good. So, good. As you should.
And take her to see the lights. And just because we can't really explain to her what's going on, whenever there's something really cool, like a birthday or, you know, Christmas every year, we always like fill the bottom floor with balloons and just light everything up so that when she comes downstairs, she really knows something's happening.
Yeah.
So cool, get cool. Balloons as you out and
All right. Merry Christmas, Ivy. Yeah. So like I said, we're gonna wrap it up with that. I forgot to mention the Sean's back. I forgot to mention oh wait. So we talk about Christmas movie. My favorite Christmas movie is probably Christmas. What's it? The one with the man with the BB gun.
Christmas story.
Christmas story. That's my favorite joint. That's the. I mean, I like a lot of kid. Yeah, exactly. That's my favorite joint, and I've been watching a whole bunch of Black Christmas movies on BT, TV One.
Oh yeah, Amazon Prime has it on lock. If you're looking for more Black Christmas movies, that's where they are.
I've been watching them. They're all terrible, but I all like them anyway. They're just the terrible movies. But
no, the good ones are on Prime. Like, okay. Check it out. There's one called Boxing Day that Reagan Gomez recommended on Twitter.
Okay.
And it's very good. I was like, yes, this is it. And then I fell down a rabbit hole. So
Yeah. I'm a dig in. Yes, that's it. We're gonna wrap it up on that, man. You know, happy holidays to everybody. Merry Christmas, Nye. You missed it. Be safe for the holidays or going into the new year. Wear your mask, like Andrew Caldwell.
Wear your mask.
My ass. Okay.
Happy holidays, everybody.
All right, we'll see y'all next year. We'll see y'all next year.
Next year. Bye.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @PopLifePodcast.